So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Review Man.
Look, I am Cassius Ohno, and I don't plan to be an FCW for a very long time, as I will be a WWE superstar. All right. The scouting report on me says that I can cuss with my kicks and I KO with my elbow, and that's true. But what people don't realize is how much joy it brings me to knock my opponents unconscious. Anybody can end up with a lucky submission or cradle somebody for a 1-2-3, but it takes a man with real power to knock another man out. And that puts a smile on my face. So next week, see that power for yourself. Next week, you can see this smile. Next week, FCW Universe, it's Cassius. Oh no.
He's over the hills and through the trees. He catches the crooks and kills the thieves. And after wounds he laughs. He cracked the pot of the evil man. The sweat of his priest's benchman ran. And afterwards he laughed. And oh.
Welcome to Review Away, my favorite podcast of all the ones me and Wei do. You know why, Wei?
Why?
Because we are live in studio together and not relying on Skype.
Ah, yes. Well, for those of you who had the privilege of tuning in Monday night to our live edition of Review of Raw,
it's a completely different experience than those of you who download the show late Monday night. You would never know, I think, from editing that. Just how much shit we've got to piece together. It's fun.
Yeah, I suppose that would be some incentive for people to tune into to the live edition. But boy, was this week's a tough one for me, for you, for our listeners.
Yes, I'll apologize if my anger came through on this podcast because there was a good 20 minutes where I was just so angry. Discussing Raw, a show that I thought was excellent.
Yeah.
And these technical problems.
I'd like to go back and re-listen to the edited version where you probably, you know, you sound very jovial and happy for one sentence and then all of a sudden.
I should save it because when we get disconnected, I'm still recording. So my, when something goes wrong, even though I'm by myself, I will still yell and swear
even though
I'm with no one.
Uh-huh.
And that is why I'm so upset, because no one can hear me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I should save those. Those are the lost files of Review of Raw.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we've had a lot of issues, and
we are currently addressing them, everyone. For Review of Raw, we're kind of we should update everyone here at Fight Network. We're in the process of moving offices to a different location, and this new location is I think much better equipped for what we're going to be doing podcast-wise. I hope.
Maybe, maybe not. We'll find out.
Very optimistic way.
Yeah, yeah. So, nevertheless, just bear with us. Bear with us like you have bore with us. Is that the right word?
Yeah.
Throughout all of our technical difficulties
yes.
in the past. This show is not what it is without any type of technical or website difficulty.
Well, some people might find that charming, but I hate it. And thinking as a listener, if I was a listener, it would drive me insane. And I just think it makes us sound shitty. So if there's not a permanent solution, I at least would like to revisit doing it live because
yes.
it's driving me insane. And this past Monday, I think it certainly affected at least my performance on the podcast.
Well, it affects certainly my...
I was super stoked to do the show after we had a hot edition of Raw,
yeah.
and 20 minutes into that, I was just so pissed off at all these technical problems that I just wasn't happy.
Absolutely.
Well, in that case, folks, you're about to hear a whole podcast with no technical problems because we are doing this live together in a room.
Don't jinx us, man. This computer could go down.
Power could go out.
These mics could...
They've got guys here that are in the midst of moving our office, fucking around with wires and stuff, so we very well could get cut off.
Yeah.
This is the week for it to happen.
Uh-huh.
So let's discuss developmental Florida Championship Wrestling. Way, I thought a great choice by you. Florida Championship Wrestling has certainly been a hot topic over the last couple of weeks with the reports coming out that they were canceled, but that they would be stopping their television show, they'd be relocating, they weren't relocating, everything's up in the air now. Ty Bailey was released, a new guy, Cameron Simon, has been hired. Anyway, I've seen alternate spellings of the guy's name. I saw C-E-M-A-N, but the first one was C-E-M-E-N. So for a guy that will be in charge of hiring prospective talent, I mean, God, could there be a worse last name to have as a ridicule? This guy would be – what a great name for a legitimate John Laurinaitis assistant on television. This is my new assistant GM, Cameron Seaman.
Well, you do a pretty good John Laurinaitis.
I think everyone can do John Laurinaitis. I don't take that as a real impressive one.
What is the history of FCW's association with
Well, they've WWE. Been the developmental company for the WWE going back to 2008. For those, WWE Developmental has been around now since 1999, I believe, where they had a territory. They were working with the IWA promotion in Puerto Rico. They had Memphis, which is where The Rock came out of, Flex Cavana, where they had Kurt Angle was down in Memphis for a long time. And then Jim Cornette wanted to get off the road with the WWE and start up Ohio Valley Wrestling was already operating with Danny Davis, and Cornette wanted to work alongside him and make it a developmental territory. And that was kind of the gold standard when it came to a developmental territory was OVW, because they toured around the area. They did television. You can just look at the list of guys that they prepared for television very well. And then they expanded. They got rid of Memphis. They got rid of their partnership with Puerto Rico. They were also working with the Heartland Wrestling Association with Les Thatcher for a time up until 2002. And then they ceased operations with Ohio Valley Wrestling, where they had a Deep South at the time, and now they consolidated everything into Florida. So that's a brief and confusing history of development.
No, not at all.
Kind of centered around Florida. A lot of the guys are based in Florida. So that was they just wanted everyone in one location. And I guess that's an interesting topic, because if I was the WWE, I mean, Florida Championship Wrestling has not really produced a lot of guys. This is year number four where they've been in Florida, and really the guys that have come out of there, like Del Rio and Sheamus, Wade Barrett, these Slider. Are guys who all had a lot of seasoning already. Brian Danielson was down there for a ridiculously long time. Lowkey was there. I mean, the talent that's come out of there has succeeded. Can you really say FCW got these guys to that point?
Right. I guess my question is everybody with an FCW a developmental signee, or do they just have guys that are strictly there for FCW?
I think there are some that don't have contracts. Mm. Yeah, I don't know 100%.
Okay. And who is currently in charge of FCW at this time?
Right now, the trainers you have down there are Ricky Steamboat. They have Dr. Tom Pritchard is down there as well. Of course, you see Steve Kern and Norman Smiley, who have television roles as well. Those are kind of your central trainers. Billy Kidman was a trainer down there, but he's now on the road with the WWE working in the back. And that's pretty much – Jim Ross has been down there quite a lot of late, working with a lot of the talent. Mm-hmm. And I think Triple H is going to be the one overseeing all of developmental, and I think we're going to see a lot of changes over the next couple of months. They're discussing expanding into Stanford now with Terry Taylor and potentially Fit Finlay coming in. But Fit Finlay's a weird one, not to get off the path here, but you know, everyone was reporting he has signed. We did that interview on the weekend where he denied signing, and then today Ring of Honor has announced he's going to be working the Toronto show on May 12th.
Really?
So,
wow.
Fit Finlay is at least taking bookings as of right now. So that would kind of, I don't know what the holdup has been, but I assume that's what it is. Some kind of holdup, and ultimately he'll be back.
Mm-mm.
Florida Championship Wrestling Way, March 11th and March 18th. I don't know. I think everyone's going to enjoy this podcast, but I don't know how many people were dying to delve into this. We've got a grand total of zero feedback for this show.
Oh.
And I will blame some of that on the timeline situation, and also a lot on this is a lot of talent no one's familiar with. outside of maybe recognizing some names. But that's cool. We will try and get back on the feedback train next week.
Well, it makes this podcast much quicker for us. So, come on. It's fine.
So, let's start off. The March 11th show. And it starts off with a recap from the prior week where Mike Dalton, who was trained by Lance Storm, the Storm Wrestling Academy, defeated Leo Kruger, who's, I guess, an older guy by WWE standards, 32 years old, out of South Africa. He's been working for years and years. Lost the FCW title to Mike Dalton, and then they were going to set up a rematch for later on in the show. And the announcers for FCW are William Regal doing color and Chris Russo. I went to high school with a Chris Russo.
No, not this one.
Not this one, no.
Regal has been a great surprise on this show. How long has he been commentating for FCW?
He's been commentating for FCW for quite a while now. Probably around the same time he started doing NXT Redemption, which was over a year ago, as we are well into the year plus of this current season of NXT. And a few names on this show that were currently on NXT.
Yep.
Russo and Regal, I don't know what you thought of them. I found them to be just oil and water. I found they were a really bad team. Just stumbling over each other. Regal didn't seem as on point as he is on NXT, and I don't blame, you know, Regal on this, but I just, the two didn't work for me.
Well, I don't watch NXT, so I haven't experienced.
I don't
Regal.
See a lot of it either, but from what I've heard, you know, the few clips and stuff that I see on NXT, I've always found Regal to be entertaining. I don't have a long amount of to judge it on.
I thought Regal was fantastic on the show. I thought. I mean, Russo is pretty much a standard commentator. At least he knows some of these moves.
Yeah, calling the action, I didn't find either of them bad in that sense. And Regal was really good at kind of getting the story across. It was just their interplay, I would say, was their weak part. They had no rapport.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, no, I agree with you there. But I felt like Regal, just from these performances, these two episodes alone, I thought that he was already light years better than Lawler or Booker T right now on the current product. I mean, a lot of that has to do, though, with the freedom that he's given to talk about the actual histories of these guys. Like this Mike Dalton, Regal, you know, goes on to talk about Lance Storm being his trainer and going to histories of specific moves like, Frank... what is it? Carl Gotch inventing the German suplex and other things technically that you never hear in actual commentary. So I thought Regal did a tremendous job. Russo is pretty much a standard commentator.
Our first match is Alexander Rusev and Big E Langston, who was the big bodybuilder we saw during that John Cena video, who was bench pressing that gigantic amount. So that's... the little bit you've seen of him on WWE. He's a 26-year-old guy. So he's one that I think will get the call-up eventually just because of the nature of he presents what the WWE likes. But he's a strong man, but very short. Uh-huh. And they don't really position him as a strong man, on this show. Like, outside of that reference point with the Cena video, you wouldn't really know that this guy is a big bodybuilder.
He looked like a very generic independent wrestler.
Yes, he did. And they took on the team of Jason Jordan and CJ Parker, who, if I'm not mistaken, was one of the lifeguards on Baywatch. A female.
CJ, yeah, Pam Anderson.
Yeah, wasn't it CJ Parker?
I don't know if it was Parker, but...
Anyway, we continue onwards. I'm sorry, I'm being a bad co-host here, getting text messages. Jordan, I thought, had a very good look here.
CJ Parker was, in fact, Pam Anderson's
Who names
character.
Him CJ Parker?
The same people who name him Conor O'Brien or whatever.
Or Kenneth Cameron.
Yeah.
Some of the names on this show are wow, very inventive. Langston and Rusev did a few power spots. They would squash Jason Jordan in between them. Jordan seemed to be the standout babyface in this match, who they seemed to... I thought he had a good look, had some good spots in this match. It built up to a hot tag to Jordan, who hit a high cross and then knocked Langston off the apron. Jordan hit a high drop kick to Langston and then a double clothesline to the floor, but then Rusev hit the black hole slam, which was not identified as such, to Parker, but then misses a splash, and Parker applies the Mahistral cradle for the win. They went 6 minutes and 2 seconds, and Regal was warning the babyfaces how they got by here, but some of the mistakes they made, they won't make it in the WWE by making those mistakes.
So they established that, yes, in fact, FCW is a developmental, a promotion for the WWE.
Oh, yeah. There's no disguise that this is not a feeder system.
What I found interesting just from watching the first match is that they refer to FCW as the FCW universe.
Yes.
And the FCW wrestlers as superstars, which is, expected.
Which I never thought I could find a term more annoying than WWE universe, but at least I can accept the WWE in its scope as universal. FCW is not universal.
It's a universe.
Other than being in the same state as Universal Studios.
It's a universe of 30 people, and that was evident from this crowd because...
The crowds are horrible. It takes so much away.
There is no reaction whatsoever for anything these guys do. I mean, Parker goes for a hot tag in this match.
Nothing. It's a tag.
They're wrestling
FCW.
They're wrestling for 30 people, and 30 of... If you thought the Impact Zone had, pretty lame fans, this... At least the Impact Zone people react to maybe like an applause sign or something, but these people just give them nothing. Nothing.
Which is quite the leap when you go from these 30 people to being thrown out on Raw in a dark match, such
absolutely.
As, like Dean Ambrose had to do this past week.
Mm-hmm.
It's a gigantic leap, and it felt... let's continue onwards here. At the end, we'll talk about the overall feel of the show. But we have it's pretty much straight matches in this. Very little vignettes or you'd have isolated interviews at ringside with some of the guys. They recap this angle from last week where Byron Saxton, who was on NXT in the past and was an ECW commentator when the show was axed, he did an angle where he attacked Kenneth Cameron, who's a British wrestler, a British baby-faced goth character named Kenneth.
Yeah. Is there some reference here?
How many baby faces do you know that are named Kenneth? And is that a goth name to you? This guy is like Edge, circa 98. Like right down to his entrance where he just puts his arms out and yells.
Yeah, I kind of saw him as
Kenneth.
More of a Tyler Rex, but or like a Taker-like gimmick. The thing that stood out most to me about his entrance was that at the end of his entrance, he holds his palm up to his face. To the bottom of his face, and suddenly a light appears, and
what?
There's like a flashlight in the palm of his hand, and he's pointing the flashlight at his face. It was funny. Undertaker, this is not.
Don't do special effects if you can't pull them off. Flashlight. I wish I saw this. Byron Saxton was supposed to take on Kenneth Cameron, but he came out with his right arm in a sling and says his shoulder is not fully healed and he cannot compete. Byron Saxton is the last man on earth that still wears a chain wallet.
Him and...
Jericho's even dumped it.
Him and Joe Rogan, I think.
We had Joe Rogan wears one.
And Dead Mouse, apparently.
Well, at least he's in good company.
Yeah.
He has found a replacement in Colin Cassidy. And Cassidy is a very tall individual.
He is built as...
Looks like Chris Nowinski.
That's exactly what I noticed as well. But a 7-foot tall, 300-pound Chris Nowinski as he was built.
This was not the guy we saw sitting in the crowd at Hall of Fame.
Yes, that's right. We noticed Chris Nowinski in attendance at the Hall of Fame this past weekend.
No one reported this on the weekend, to the best of my knowledge. But the Hall of Fame, The Rock was not there.
Yeah. Is it that big of a deal?
You didn't think it was, but I just thought it was, with all the buildup about this guy is too big for us, he's moved on, and then the Hall of Fame, which is always a big deal, and the guy blows it off.
I didn't necessarily see it as him blowing it off as much as maybe the WWE not wanting him there.
I don't know why.
I mean, Vince wasn't there.
Vince is never out there. He's always in the back.
Who else? I just didn't think it was that big of a deal, but I mean, maybe some did. Especially, considering that one of his family members, like in Yokozuna, was inducted, I guess that is surprising.
He was rumored early to induct Yokozuna.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Cassidy is tall, and he's Kenneth Cameron is doing a winning streak gimmick where he's been winning for the last 5 months. So he had about as much heat here as Crimson with his gimmick. And there's a rear choke applied by Cameron. Saxton then rips his sling off and back elbows Cameron, and Cassidy gets the win. 4.5 minutes, and this is where Chris Russo states that Byron Saxton has duped the FCW universe. I chuckled.
I thought Cameron's in-ring style looked good. It was like a fast and technical style. Here he wrestled as a small guy against a giant in Cassidy, who came across kind of green to me. I guess what I was looking in these matches was just how ready I felt these guys were for the WWE.
Yeah, that's how I watched it too.
And I felt like Cassidy was very green. And his look...
But he's tall and big, which put him at the top of my list.
I suppose so, but you know what? He was also kind of flabby around the waist, so I could just see these things as things that are holding the guy back.
Yep. So Kenneth Cameron's winning streak is over, so we've actually found a winning streak that's less effective than Crimson's, which has already made this show worth watching.
Sure.
Regal, I just thought, was really off in this match, and he even pulled like attention to it. He's like, I'm on a different page here. I'm sorry. Like, he was pointing out that he was, like, just off. It's weird. Then we got a Divas match, which is women for you non-WWE fans. Sophia Cortez, who was Ivelisse on the last season of Tough Enough, taking on Audrey Marie. Audrey.
Who's that?
How many hot women have you ever met named Audrey?
I don't know. I don't really keep track.
I just think it's a bad name. Audrey.
It's a name.
I apologize to any women out there named Audrey. Yeah. I'm sure you are all very attractive women, but I have never met one.
Is Sophia any better?
Sophia's fine.
Why?
But Audrey. It's like the... What would be a male equivalent? Like a...
Kenneth?
A Hank.
What's wrong with Hank?
It's the bad name for... You're trying to sell these women as young and sexy, and you're giving them the name Audrey.
Okay.
There's no women under the age of 40 named Audrey. People, Audreys are just born 60.
What about Audrey O'Day? Who's that?
Audrey O'Day. Rings a bell. Audrey Hepburn.
Oh, she's a... Who is this? Yeah, she's in Danity Kane. A member of the girl group Danity Kane.
Great.
There you go. Okay.
Cortez, yanks the arm of Audrey Marie over the top rope, which did not look great, but it led to her working over the left arm throughout. This is where I noted Russo and Regal just tripping over each other. Cortez had the heat throughout the match. They play up her past in Puerto Rico. Each grabs the other's hair and go to the mat. And then at one point, Regal says, "I see so many things, but I'll get myself fired if I point attention to them." I didn't know what he meant here. I mean, you would just think, oh, sexual innuendo. But I think he meant that this match sucked. I didn't know what to make of this. But Regal, being pretty honest here, I guess. I thought Sophia Cortez looked really good in this match.
Yes.
Quickly here, just Marie made the comeback. And she hit a black hole slam. And so TNA producers taking jobs on the side here, I guess, with similar finishes.
Well, it's not like he invented the move.
I just saw it 2 matches ago here. And hits the finish while Russo was busy plugging a show at an upcoming fair in Florida. And Audrey gets the win, 4 minutes and 36 seconds. Sophia Cortez, I thought, was the standout here. She looked ready to me alongside any of the divas right now in the WWE.
I totally agree. Audrey, on the other hand, looked like she was completely new with this. But she does have a better look, I'd say, than Sophia. But, you know, not to say Sophia is unattractive. Like, she's very attractive. But she's definitely in the mold of more of a worker rather than, you know, a Kelly or a Bella, you know, who's just more of eye candy than worker.
After the match, they shot an angle where Raquel Diaz, who's the FCW Divas Champion, comes out. She is also the queen of FCW.
And the daughter of Eddie Guerrero.
Which is so weird, because they talked on a later show about her family lineage and goes so back in this industry, and yet they've renamed her.
Yeah.
Why?
On the same show, which we did, but we didn't see it, but on the same roster, we have Husky Harris and Bo Rotunda.
Yeah.
Two people who are supposed to be brothers. Did they reference them as
brothers?
Yeah,
you're right. You're right. They're brothers, and they have different names. Strange. She comes out with this new British talent that they've signed, Brittany Knight, who is going by the name Paige. And they all attack Marie, but then who makes the big save way? Caitlin,
the NXT Season 3 winner.
Remember her.
Caitlin.
Yes. I don't know. Don't know about Caitlin, maybe.
I don't either. I mean, why was she chosen to win that season, in hindsight?
Because it was a disaster of all disasters. I don't know how the girl Naomi didn't win. She was, like, the best athlete on that season, and she's on TV now.
Yeah.
With
Well, I mean, AJ has been the most successful of all.
Yeah, that's true. Yep.
But the winners of those seasons really don't mean anything. It really means nothing.
You read SmackDown spoilers yet?
Yeah.
They broke them up.
Oh, I know.
Daniel Bryan and AJ.
Yep. Yeah, well, about
time. I think Daniel Bryan's going to take off. Did you hear Miami Heat game on Tuesday night?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, champ broke out.
I know. By the way, we should have... warn people. Spoilers for that.
Oh, whatever. Tidbit. Come on, it's SmackDown.
Hey, people take this stuff seriously. But you know, like, what really stood out to me, though, was the report saying that people cheered it. People cheered him dumping and just dumping AJ. And this poor girl to suffer all this humiliation. Now she's going to probably end up as a heel in the end of all this.
No, I think it'll be worse. I think she's going to just disappear from TV and she's going to be on Superstars and stuff, which is too bad.
Maybe.
Because you know what? Yeah, Daniel Bryan did a great job, but he also had... I thought AJ was great.
Yeah.
Just playing the sympathetic... babyface in love with Daniel Bryan. I thought AJ was great. And she's going to get nothing out of it, I don't think.
I mean, if the roles were switched, if the crowd... it's really the fan reaction, as cool as it was, really threw off whatever storyline I'm sure they had planned for these two.
You know what would be a great storyline is that, to try and rehab them, is that Zach moves on from Eve and he falls for AJ, and it's the two nerds getting together. And they package those two.
Would that be good?
I don't know if it would be good, but it would be...
What drama is there? They're just two...
Well, you do...
Two geeks.
Well, it's Zach's revenge on Eve. He moves on. And then you could do an AJ Eve program.
Oh, okay. I'm not... Doesn't sound too interesting to me. But
it'd be great.
Why not?
Wrestle and romance.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on.
Cassius Ohno comes out for his debut promo.
Mm-hmm.
First appearance on FCW. This is the promo that I'm sure most people have seen by now because it was put out right after this aired. And talks about how he's coming into FCW but doesn't plan to be here very long. And he'll make his debut next week. And his opponents will be saying, "It's Cassius. Oh no."
Ooh.
I like his name. I like the. I read it, and my usual reaction to when they rename guys is like, ugh. It's just like a lot of bad names, but this one works for
me. Well, the thing is,
doing a knockout gimmick and named Cassius. Yeah. Makes sense.
It makes sense, but it's not a gimmick you would ever find in real life. It's not a name you would ever find in real life. Imagine a UFC fighter named Cassius Ohno, a white guy named Cassius Ohno,
okay,
whose initials are KO,
okay,
and he KOs people.
All right, but we've got, is CM Punk or Triple H really realistic names? The Undertaker? I mean, it's...
No, it's not. You're right.
This
you're
isn't
right.
an embarrassing name. You
it's
know
a different...
I mean?
But it is a different age, I feel. And to me, this gimmick, I mean, the name of the gimmick, it's a little campy. It's a little too 90s for
Chris
my liking.
Chris Hero?
Let's be honest,
that's a goofier name.
Oh,
than
I know. I'm not saying that was better. I'm not saying that's any better. But if you're going to rename a guy, I would rather you take it to a more realistic route, especially if you're going to give him a realistic gimmick, such as a guy who KOs people. I think that's a great gimmick, especially for a guy like this. There could be much worse for him out there. But I just feel like, come on, that guy KOs people. So his initials, of course, have to match.
I don't mind it at all, actually. I think this is one of the better FCW names. I think this is fine.
When I first saw this promo, that was my initial reaction that, the gimmick's a little campy, but Hero is really doing what he can with it, and he really did a great job with this promo.
How long will he be in FCW? Or is he going to get called up if they go off the air and they have this move over to Stanford? Because, let's be honest, this guy is ready.
No, I wouldn't say so. I feel like his look, again, is what's mainly driving him back. We know his mic work is great. We know his in-ring work is great. But, to have him put up there amongst the Mason Ryans and amongst the David Otungas, this guy needs to start working out, maybe start putting some extra time into the gym.
I find it ridiculous that our standard is like David Otunga is what people should look like.
It's not my standard.
These are ridiculous exaggerated bodies.
Believe me, if it was up to me, they'd all look like this guy. But I'm talking about from the perspective of Vince, from the perspective of a Triple H. They're going to see this Chris Hero and they're going to think, I mean,
this guy
is the guy that knocks people out. He doesn't look like it. So I feel like that's the main thing that's holding this guy back right now.
So they had been building up to a big announcement from FCW President Skinner, Steve Kern, to come out, and he has an associate general manager. This is just the staple of all WWE programming, a president and an associate. So they come out, Chris Russo announces that it's going to be on like Donkey Kong. Horrible. And Kern calls out yet another authority figure we have on this show, the general manager, Maxine.
Maxine, also from NXT.
Yeah. So Maxine is in trouble because she has hired a psychologist, James Bronson, who is secretly a wrestler that has had sessions with all the wrestlers and now knows every secret and has turned these secrets over to Maxine. And Steve Kern and Norman Smiley have found this out, and they fire her.
Jesus Christ.
This is among the dumbest storylines I've ever heard.
How many times did you have to rewatch this segment to gather this?
Well, I watched both these shows, and I had no idea if Maxine was a babyface or a heel.
Uh-huh.
Because we had Regal, like, taking shots at her at the beginning, then feeling sorry for her. She played the heel in the setup here about hiring the psychologist, but then was presented as a baby face after it to the new GM, who appears to be a heel.
Mm-hmm.
I was so confused.
It is very confusing. And if she's attempting to be a baby face in this feud, she just comes across as just a very smug-looking person anyway. So I don't know. Not a big fan of hers from NXT. I don't know how she was doing in this role, but it didn't look very promising.
And then we go to our main event, Mike Dalton defending his FCW title a week after winning it against Leo Kruger. And this was easily the best match on the show. Regal here, noting that he's waffling a bit tonight because there's a lot going on. And Regal really puts over Leo Kruger's legitimate trainer, Danny Britz, who Regal calls the best wrestler he ever worked against, but someone who never made it over to the U.S., just based in South Africa. There's a funny bit here where they went to a commercial and the graphic came up where it said continues as they go to break. Then they came back and the graphic stayed up there after the break that said continues. We saw a wheelbarrow by Kruger and then dropped Dalton onto his front. Dalton hit a drop kick to Kruger coming off the top rope, and then Dalton fired up, hit a spinning heel kick, an implant DDT, but Kruger would get his foot on the ropes. And this is where Dalton applied the single leg crab, and Regal acknowledged Lance Storm here for perfecting the single leg crab. And Kruger applied a sleeper hold. Dalton fights to his feet, then they go back down. And all of a sudden, the referee calls for the bell at 12:22. And just like that, this was maybe the least impactful heavyweight title change I have ever seen on a wrestling program, where Dalton had a one-week reign, and Regal, to his credit here, put Mike Dalton over huge.
Yeah.
That thousands would kill to have the title for 1 week, and Dalton has done what few have been able to do. But what a strange finish here, and crowd could care less.
The crowd went wild for this title change.
Like, yeah, time to go home.
Yeah. I don't know how many tapings they sat through before this or whatever, but this crowd just didn't care.
Sucked.
I thought this match was kind of slow. I thought it was a bit sloppy at parts, too. Maybe that's because I wasn't very familiar with these characters, but I wasn't too into this match.
I thought that they both worked fine together. Dalton has just a look about him that, to me, is like, if he does get called up, he'll quickly become a Tyson Kidd-level character.
Yeah.
I just don't see him as someone that they'd really get behind. And Leo Kruger, I mean, the guy's getting up there in age and cuts a good promo on the next show, but I don't know. There was no one on this show that just screamed to you, ready.
Aside from Cassius Ohno.
Yeah, but even him, I mean, you point out certain limitations that I'm sure they see.
You know, Sophia was a stand-up for me as well amongst the women.
Yeah. So we'll move on now to the March 18th show. And a cool thing that they do at the end of each show is they air a clip of Gordon Solie signing off from the Sunshine State, from the old Championship Wrestling from Florida show. So I like that. It's a nice little nod to the past.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Gordon Solie is as associated with Florida as anyone involved in the industry. So the March 18th show, off the top, they announced that Richie Steamboat will be defending his Jack Briscoe medal, where... It's
the Jack Briscoe 15 challenge,
where it's a 15-minute Ironman match when he defends not a title, but a medal that you put around your neck. And they also announced that there is a new general manager. Let the speculation begin.
Who could it be?
Ooh.
The universe is buzzing.
Yep. We start off with Dante Dash against the heel psychologist who does a bully gimmick, James Bronson. And Bronson here looked like a lost member of the Vachon family.
He actually looked shockingly to me like Damien from Fucked Up.
Maybe they're related.
Maybe.
Because, I don't know, James Abraham.
Maybe.
Better than James Bronson. Death Wish. Charles Bronson.
Yeah.
I guess that's the... Because when I see Charles Bronson, I think heel psychologist.
We can disagree with on names.
Oh, you like James Bronson.
I don't mind James Bronson, but I probably prefer Bronson to Ohno.
What's Charles Bronson's kid's name?
I don't know.
Oh, I don't know.
Why?
Who cares? It doesn't matter.
Well, you want to know if it's James?
No, I don't think it is. A very quick match. Bronson beats down Dash, beats him with the Taz mission, a minute 41. That was that. Not much to this.
Both guys just look like indie nerds to me.
Good start. Leo Kruger has his title. Says, I told you so. Calls his title loss a fluke. Says he's the greatest FCW champion of all time. Dalton might be a Rocky-style character, but he is the real-life champion. A good promo from Kruger here. The way they do these promos is they just cut promos from ringside.
Yeah, but you know what I noticed was that, I mean, this and the Ohno promo, they clearly get to cut promos using their own words, and I don't know if they're even using bullet points, but they use their own words, but this is not the style that they'll be using when they get called up to the WWE.
Do you think they're using their own words?
I do. I certainly Chris Hero promo, I felt like it was very much, and this one too, it seemed like he wasn't really memorizing, it just seemed like it was more natural, and that these guys thought it up themselves.
We've got a tag match with Audrey Marie and Caitlin against Sophia Cortez and Paige, and Marie and Caitlin do a chest bump for their entrance when they come out, and Russo points out how pale Paige is, and basically here, Paige and Sophia Cortez have formed an anti-diva army. It's a carbon copy of Pin Up Strong, except they haven't broken up yet and turned one of them without informing us.
Mm-hmm.
Did you on NXT this week? They did an angle where Tyson Kidd was wrestling with Natalya in his corner, and Michael McGillicuddy came out and had a pair of Natalya's panties.
Yeah.
And sniffs them.
Uh-huh.
What the fuck are they doing?
They're writing great television. And
does this mean that Michael McGillicuddy has like a, I don't know, shit-stained fetish or something? Because of Natalya's gimmick?
Oh, that's right.
It all ties together.
Oh, God. Are they acknowledging that those two are married on TV?
I don't think so.
Okay. I will not be watching NXT. I didn't even know Michael McGillicuddy was back.
Yep.
Well,
you're not one of the McGilla buddies.
No, I'm not. And what a return. Sniffing Natalya's farty panties.
It's a metaphor.
Yeah.
For the storyline. They work over Marie. Russo notes how Paige's mother, father, and brother are all wrestlers. Regal had no idea, I think, about this. Though he does mention meeting Paige when she was just a child.
Who are her parents?
I don't know. Independent workers in England.
Okay.
Paige applies this reverse figure four and then locks Marie's arms.
An interesting move. Like an inverted sharpshooter that Edge used to use.
She certainly came across as very ready in the ring.
Yeah.
Caitlin comes in, applied this arm submission behind Paige, who was submitted in her debut match, 4:59. Strange booking here. So the baby faces win. I guess this feud's over. They've destroyed the army. And afterwards, the heels attack Audrey Marie, but coming to their save is ring announcer Kaylee Turner, who is Christina Crawford, Alicia Fox's younger sister from Tough Enough as well.
Yes.
So, Tough Enough all over this show.
Tough Enough all over the show.
Nothing like getting saved by the ring announcer.
Well, we know the level of Alicia Fox, and I suppose Kaylee is a beginner's Alicia Fox, which is to say, not very good at this moment. But you know, she could. I guess from what we saw in Tough Enough, like she seems to have like a good attitude, and you know, it takes a lot of time, but she could do something.
Just don't have her do any leapfrogs in the ring. She'll be fine.
Yes.
They go to Aiden English in the back, who's like this big tall guy that has a striking resemblance to Claudio Castagnoli. And Bronson walks in, shoves Rob Naylor, who's the assistant here, and threatens Naylor. I don't know what this was leading to. And then we go to Xavier Woods, the former Consequences Creed in TNA, taking on Cassius Ohno in Ohno's debut match on FCW. Russo and Regal really play up the fact that Ohno is an internet darling and has had lots of press before he came here, and comparing him to the likes of Seth Rollins and Antonio Cesaro and Dean Ambrose as guys that had a lot of buzz coming in, and if they can handle the move here to FCW without actually saying where they came from.
Basically saying the truth, and that to me is the most compelling story you could make for any person, is just to speak the truth, and I was totally gripped. Regal even goes on to say that he's known Ohno for ages, that he used to train with him, Dave Taylor, and Fit Finlay. And something just tells me that you would never be able to hear this type of commentary in the WWE.
Oh, you don't say. He even brought up Johnny Saint and Robbie Brookside here in commentary. Russo calls Woods one of the smartest people in FCW. He's doing like a smart man gimmick because he's still in school. And he's got an IQ of 167 and is called the valedictorian of sports entertainment.
Wow.
Okay. Does that mean, does he do a speech every taping?
He would do a speech once they graduate from FCW,
yeah.
I guess.
Wouldn't that be a great special, the FCW graduating class? There's a running boot to Woods. Regal even mentions Ohno training with Misawa and Kawada, and that's how he learned to use his spinning elbow.
Yeah.
His commentary was very refreshing. There's a thumb to the eye of Woods, sit-out dropkick by Ohno for a two count, and then a high knee to the jaw. Woods comes back with a tilt-a-whirl head scissors, and then a sit-out dropkick for two. Forward roll into a clothesline by Woods for a two count, and then Woods dropkicks Ohno to the floor and follows up with a plancha. Ohno drops him on the steps, comes into the ring, hits him with the right elbow for the knockout, and pins him in 7 minutes and 36 seconds. Both guys look good in this match. It wasn't a blowaway performance or anything like that. I think the finish was a little flat. You want to build this up to this big knockout, and it's, I don't know, just didn't get any reaction, but such is the
nothing
case
got
with this audience.
Nothing got any reaction. I really like the KO gimmick for Hero, because he has great-looking strikes. The rolling elbow, of course, is a great move. And the difference is, we talked about KO and TKO finishes on a Revere Raw Monday. I mean, I like this much better in this instance, because even after he delivers a strike, he goes for the pinfall, which is logical. You don't just back away in a wrestling match.
Unless you're Lord Tensai.
Which is why I didn't really like that, because even if you do knock a guy out, if you think you knocked a guy out, you still go for the pinfall.
Raquel Diaz is out, and is wearing her tiara and wants her banner.
This is like a Madison Rain. Madison Rain.
Yep. And she says she is close to making Audrey Marie snap. Just snap. Yeah. And has enlisted some WWE muscle in Caitlyn, has Audrey Marie. But Raquel fights her own battles, and then Marie attacks her, and they're separated by officials. This, to me, came off as, you know, she was trying very hard here to cut a convincing promo, but it just didn't work.
Seems a bit forced.
Yeah, I agree.
But it's not like she's completely terrible on the mic. Like, she seems actually quite comfortable. And considering her lineage, I mean, it's not surprising.
So, without any real big announcement, we just go to Summer Rae laying on a couch in the back, who is our new general manager.
Summer Rae is, I guess one of your typical diva blondes.
Think Tiffany.
Think any other blonde
any
that
other
the WWE
blonde
has hired. Yeah.
And she is with Corey Graves and Jake Carter, who is Vader's son, the tag team champions. And they walk off, and she tells the assistant, Rob Naylor, to set up dates with them, one on Friday and one on Saturday, as she lays out on the couch. And then Maxine walks in, says she is not finished with Summer Rae, and then she slaps Naylor. I was so confused. No clue what role anyone was playing.
We haven't been following the storyline. This could be an amazing storyline for all we know.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe this is right out of 1986 Mid-South book.
Yeah. But as for the question of whether or not these girls are ready for the WWE, sure they are. I mean, they all act about as good as any other diva. They certainly can't wrestle Eddie Murphy and Kelly, so then yes, they definitely are ready.
As soon as Summer Rae can look comfortable lying on a couch, I will admit improvement, because even that, she looked out of her element. Mm. Main event, Richie Steamboat taking on Antonio Cesaro for the Jack Briscoe 15 medal. Mm-hmm. And first fall was a German suplex, a bridge by Cesaro at the 4:15 mark. Cesaro used a submission with Steamboat on his back and then drove him into the corner. Steamboat started to fight back. Cesaro ducked a super kick. They go to the outside of the apron, series of hip toss blocks, and then Steamboat goes to the top rope but gets crotched. And Steamboat blocks a suplex off the corner and comes back with a sunset flip to tie it up right around the 11-minute mark or so. Then they work for the final couple of minutes. There's a backslide attempt by both. Steamboat gets a two count, European uppercut by Cesaro, and then a backslide by Steamboat for a two count. And they just went back and forth with near falls. They were tied with 30 seconds to go. Cesaro used his feet on the ropes for a two count, small package reversals, and it ends with a cradle by Steamboat, but time expires. They announce the match is a draw, with each getting one fall apiece. And then Steamboat poses with his medal, but gets attacked from behind by Cesaro, who grabs the medal. He steps on Steamboat. Steamboat makes his own comeback, hits him with a super kick, and then he poses with the medal and does the chicken dance to end the show.
The chicken dance. I don't know what that was. Was that the Mox, Cesaro, or something? I thought this was a very good match, especially for an FCW show compared to the last show. I thought this was a very, very good match. In terms of in-ring, I think both guys are more than ready. Cesaro, definitely. But Richie's, to me, his biggest weakness, aside from his mic ability, which I haven't been able to see yet, I would say is his size and his look. He's a smaller guy, and his look, he just looks like a very generic guy, does not come across at all like a superstar. And of course they could fix that if they build him as Steamboat's son, if they gave him a great gimmick. I think you can always overcome that, but at the moment, I would pick Cesaro of the two.
Yeah, you look at, one of the most difficult parts is when you're recruiting so many of these second and third generation wrestlers, is just they automatically come in with the stamp on them. Like Shaul Guerrero, you watch, and you're immediately thinking of Eddie and even Vicky here. Mm-hmm. And with Richie Steamboat, you're automatically comparing him to Ricky Steamboat. Whereas, you know, you come in and you're Cassius Ohno, it's not so much the you're living up to anything. And look at the guys they've recruited that have kind of growing outside of the last name. Like, Ted DiBiase is struggling with that. Michael McGillicuddy is just...
But he hasn't been growing out of the last name.
Exactly. They haven't. I would say Cody Rhodes is the only one right now who has really kind of broken through that mold. And I'm sure there's probably some others that aren't coming to mind. My only complaint in that main event is I generally am not a fan of Iron Man matches. I don't like watching, whether it be a wrestling match where you know ahead of time how long it's going. I think that takes a lot out of it as well. Even, you know, when you're watching an MMA fight, I think you're much more into it watching it live, knowing it could end at any point, versus knowing ahead of time you're going to watch five rounds.
Okay, I see that.
So I'm just not a big fan of that, but that's my own personal preference. But I thought both worked a good match. It was probably the best match of the 2 hours we watched here. And that was FCW. So what were your overall thoughts, Wei? This is not a TV show that, you know, knocks me dead that, it's great episodic programming. I want to continue watching every week.
And it's not what we expected. Like, we don't expect it to be amazing TV. If it was, then there would be no reason to watch the WWE.
Well, the devil's advocate to that, I used to watch OVW back in the day, and it was excellent. At times, way better than Raw was. I mean, they booked to big shows a number of times a year. They knew all their directions they were going in, and it was there were some awesome OVW shows way back. Like, I watched kind of 2001 through 2003, and this was a far cry from that. But I think this is a show where it's like it's important to watch because you get a good idea of who's ready and what to expect from guys when they get called up to the main roster. But if you're an average fan, I just don't know if this is, you know, you're going to be coming back and watching this every week. It didn't do a whole lot to pull me in.
Yeah, unless you're a local or unless you're a hardcore fan of the WWE, I wouldn't expect people to watch this. But it's fun. It was fun to watch. It was fun to watch for the buzzed about talents such as, you know, Hiro and Castagnoli. I found other standouts to be Consequences Creed and Evolice, as we mentioned. Also, to me, the highlight has been William Regal, because I mean, this is not really just a training ground for all these wrestlers, it's a training ground for the commentators as well, and Regal especially. He to me is already way better than any of his equivalents on the major shows, but of course I doubt he'd be able to commentate the same way once he if he ever gets the call back up.
All right, so that was our review of FCW. Gonna give these 2 hours a 4.5 out of 10.
I give it a 5. Unfortunately, no Seth Rollins on the show.
No, he wasn't there.
It would be the episode after these ones, March 25th, where he actually wins the FCW championship. So if you're interested, check that out.
In hot potato title changes, this is the promotion for you.
Oh, yeah. 2 weeks in 1 week, yeah.
Now, is that the week that Jim Ross is also on commentary?
I'm not sure.
All right.
I'm not sure.
All right, well, that's going to wrap up this review, everyone. Lots of stuff to go check out if you haven't already. We've got Review of Raw up, as well as our 3-hour WrestleMania post-show from Sunday night with Dan, Jay, and Dave Meltzer, and calls from all over the world, all across the law universe, calling into the show on Sunday night. So you can check all that out at liveaudiowrestling.com, and you can subscribe on iTunes by subscribing to Live Audio Wrestling, and be kind and leave some feedback for us, positive feedback. That would be just fantastic, everyone. It helps our ranking, and it gets the word of the law out more to people.
Yeah.
So that'd be great.
Negative feedback too, if you.
No,
wish.
Fuck off. If you want a negative feedback, just direct tweet me or something. Tell me how much you hate John.
Tell us the truth. We want to encourage the truth.
All right. Well, that's gonna wrap us up, everybody. Next week we're gonna have some fun. We are gonna review the April 10th, 2000 edition of Monday Nitro, the night that they brought back Eric Bischoff and Vince Russo and hit the reset button, vacating all the titles, shoot promos, new characters, Hulk Hogan embracing the hate. Oh boy, I can't wait for this. One of the infamous editions of Nitro. Wow. And really, the countdown to bankruptcy for this company.
I can't wait.
It's going to be a very fun edition of Review Away next week. So in the meantime, follow Way at Way0937 at Law Radio. Coming up Friday, we'll be doing Review and Impact with the return of Nate Milton. It's been too long since we've talked to Brother Nate. Mm-hmm. So he's going to be trying to get us interested in lockdown. And then this Sunday night, big edition of Live Audio Wrestling, 11 p.m. Eastern, we are going to be joined by former WWF Intercontinental Champion Tito Santana and former two-time WWF Champion Bruno Sammartino.
Wow.
As we are counting down to Wrestle Reunion, where we are going to be broadcasting live April 13th and 14th in Toronto. Lots of cool stuff coming up in the next little while. So keep it tuned to liveaudiowrestling.com, and we will chat with you later on this week. Oh, wait a minute. That's not how we end this show. We end this show with a song.
Uh-huh.
And Wei, it is your selection this week.
Okay, well, since we just saw really the debut promo and the debut match of one Cassius Ohno, I thought it'd be nice to end the show with some Mama Said Knock You Out, courtesy of LL Cool J.
Oh, and you all know how much I love LL Cool J.
Come on, man. And with the local DVC news, LL Cool J with a triumphant comeback. For a solo performance. But tonight, don't call it a comeback. Just getting warm, just like Muhammad Ali, they called them Cassius.
Until next week, then, this would be Gordon Solie saying so long from the Sunshine State.